What the Tech is brought to you by Text Expander. Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Thurrott. Welcome. It is our 10-year anniversary tour. We're kicking it off here on the 7th.
How romantic.
10 years, Paul. We've been together.
You know, happy
it's
New
wild.
Year's.
Wild. I was just a child when we met.
Right. And I still had non-gray hair.
And, you know, I probably John could find it. Maybe it's 2011. Maybe we're 9 years. Maybe it's not 10 years. I'm trying to remember when we... you know what? What phone had launched?
Oh, here we go. I'm not going to remember when this.
So Windows 7 launched in 2009, right?
Windows 7 launched. Yes, that's true.
Okay. So we met the year after.
So I remember... All right, here's something I kind of remember, I think.
When I walked into
the
bar
Windows Phone
said,
8 launch... Okay. We went to a Chinese restaurant, I think. Your wife might have came.
No, Windows 8 launch was... Oh, no, that was the one that...
No, Windows Phone 8. Windows Phone 8.
Windows Phone 8 launch, we went to a Chinese restaurant.
I don't know that that's where we met, but...
No. We're going way back. Way farther back. I remember that day.
Okay.
Happy New Year, everybody. We'll figure it out. Suncast will probably find it and give it to us, but... we're back. It's the new year. A lot has happened. I've grown. Paul has grown.
We have a lot to talk about.
It's CES week. So I thought it'd be a perfect week for us to come back and to cover this. You know, every year we do the CES coverage and every year it becomes less and less coverage from us.
Oh,
and it becomes more and more from like mainstream properties. But I remember I used to do like every day I was doing CES coverage, day one, day two, day three.
I think there's a belief, or there was, and there still is in some places, that this is important, you know? And I feel like we've kind of lost track of the original vision for CES. In fact, it is inarguable that we have. And also that CES is at the wrong time of year for what it is, you know?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And so, you know, in the gadget space, personal technology, it's a big deal. Personal computers, if you still care about that stuff, it's a big deal. TVs, obviously, all that consumer electronics.
You know, I think what changed it was Apple, right? Prior to Apple getting the coverage that it did with their events, their keynotes.
Yeah.
If you think about it, WWDC is a developers conference, and it should have nothing to do with the mainstream following. But
back in the day, though, remember they had Mac. They had Macworld events, and so Macworld was in January, and I don't remember the other August or something or September later in the year.
What it's become for me to watch CES is like, oh, look at all the things I'll never see, or look at all the things generally now it's companies are having their own announcements throughout the entire year. The same thing with E3, for example, you know, where Microsoft has is Microsoft really going to wait till E3 for their Xbox announcement, or are they going to announce it on their own because it's big enough?
Well, I can tell you what Microsoft didn't do at CES, at least not yet, is announce anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, Apple doesn't really have a presence at CES, although there's kind of some side stories around Apple this year. You know, Samsung skips all the big industry events and does their own stuff. You know, all the big companies do, but I mean, I feel like CES has become a microcosm of the press events that often occur at places like times like CES, PepCon, and those kind of shows. Where what it really is a place for smaller companies to try to be heard above the noise, and you know, hopefully, maybe somebody will come out with something interesting. It's going to be some company we never heard of. It's not going to be Google or Amazon or. You know, any of the big guys, because, you know, they all have their own events, of course. But I think that's the trick this week, is trying to filter through the noise and find the truly interesting stuff.
And
I got to tell you, I do not have the energy for that. at all. I or the interest. It's funny, to be there and to go through that. You know?
I'm going
to
tell you. So I'm looking at, like, for example, I would go to The Verge, or I would go to Engadget for CES. Yeah. Because they have, you know, they have their massive teams, or CNET even, for their massive teams that go there and cover.
Right.
I'm going to CNET right now because I want to see what they have put out there. But it's, rather than covering the top stuff now, they just cover everything. Everything
that's
is covered.
It's the wrong approach.
It's a page views game for them. It's no longer about, let's report on stuff that's really cool and innovative. They're reporting on a man that has a premature ejaculation device that prevents men.
Yeah.
And that was the top headline on either Engadget or The Verge this morning. And I'm looking at, I'm like, what happened to tech coverage?
Well, it's not run by professional reporting publications. It's run by blogs. It's all blogger based. So it's, I don't know. This is something I've always felt very strongly about. I mean, if you go back to the mid 1990s, when I started the WinInfo newsletter, the original tagline for that was all news, no fluff. And the point at that time was everything isn't worth reporting on, you know?
Yeah, no, that's the reality.
I'm going to try to portray what I think is important. I didn't always get that right. Obviously I'm just a person, but I look at the CES stuff and I think to myself, oh geez. And there are small things about CES, like I still think would be valuable. CES, because of its nature, because of all the people coming from the press, especially, or the media, it's a nice place to meet with representatives, in my case, PC makers or phone makers or whatever. They're all there. And so there is some value to that. The problem is it's such a big event. It's so hard to get around. It's so expensive to be there. It just becomes a slog, you know, to try to get through it all. So going to CES doesn't make a ton of sense.
It's also very difficult to cover stuff if you're a one-man team or two-man team, you know?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
You know, right now I'm looking at this. Climate change solution comes to CES. It has. Finally. It's not the cover of the New York Times.
Yeah.
You know.
But it also has like a bottle opener on the side, and it has a USB port on it, so you can put it on your computer.
So I do want to cover some of the stuff because there was a lot of interesting stuff. Sure. I want to start off with the big one. Oh, by the way, Suncast has something here.
Okay.
The first time, your first guest appearance on GFQ.
Okay.
It was What the Tech episode 59, Paul's Black Ops 11/10/10.
Hmm.
This week on 11, What the Tech, Paul 11/10/10. Paul Theriot joins us to talk about his book Windows Phone 7 Secrets.
Yeah, it was a big seller.
The Windows Phone 7 itself, Call of Duty Black Ops, Xbox Live Update, RIMS tablet entry, Google TV, and why Andrew has such few achievement points.
RIMS, was it called the Playbook? Was that the RIM tablet? I think it might have been.
RIM tablet entry. I guess it was a Playbook, yeah.
I think so.
Order Windows Phone Secrets on Amazon. I still have my Amazon link there. You can visit.
Don't,
Paul's
by the way,
site.
Don't order the book.
Everybody, go and order Windows Phone Secrets from Paul Theriot. You can get it on paperback for $6.29.
I will tell you, a major
only one in stock. Only one in stock.
For that book, there was no way to take screenshots of Windows Phone. There was no way. So the alternative was you could somehow mount a camera above the phone and try to get a semi-decent shot that way, which is literally impossible.
Yeah.
Or you could use like the software emulator that they had for developers, but that didn't let you run any of the big apps. Like you could run your own apps, but it didn't really have the full UI. You couldn't put content on it and stuff. So I used the emulator to take screenshots of every screen in the whole system. And then I used Photoshop to recreate what I was seeing on the screen perfectly.
That's insane.
And it was, it was a lot of work. It came out great. And I had multiple authors contact me because my book was literally the first Windows Phone book to say, hey, how did you do this? Because we can't figure out how to get screenshots. And I said, I won't tell you who they were, but I said, I told them what I told you. I told, and they, all of them said, it's too much work. I'm not doing that. Because it was a lot of work, you know.
Yeah. Suncast is also still currently looking for your first official co-host when you came on. This was the first time you were ever on.
It was probably a year that. Later. I mean, no. Sometime.
It was a couple months after that.
You think so?
Yeah, it wasn't.
I bet it was mid-year the next year or something like that. Because I think I did a couple of.
2012, I moved my I flipped the studio around. And okay. But we were doing weekly shows when I was sitting in the other, like in the other setup. So
yeah,
it was some time. It's wild. I mean, the years have gone by so much. I mean, it's crazy. But the way that we linked up was amazing. I mean, just thinking about it, we hung out at a bar and we kind of connected. That's the amazing part.
Right.
So anyway, less about our love story.
Well, I think this year needs to be all about our love story.
I think so. I think we should do the. We should do a big show somewhere near here in New York City. We can maybe time it with some event that's happening. We could do like a big bash. We could maybe do it at Rattle because they have that nice large space. Maybe we could do it. I have office space now in the city. We could do it there where I already have a studio built. We could do something really cool. We could do something really.
I'd like
awesome.
To do it at a strip club. I'd like there to be lobster and steak.
Okay.
You know what? During the event.
Do not pressure me because I could get that done. Lobster and steak being
served. Well, I was trying to put it in your wheelhouse. Like, you know.
Boy, has my career taken a strange turn, Paul.
It has to make sense for you, too. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand. It's about me. So CES has started. I want to talk about one of the big stories coming out of Yes last night. And it's that Sony has a prototype for a car now that they unveiled at CES. And I find this interesting for a number of reasons. One, that a tech company like Sony, which is not they're not Apple, they're not Google,
not exactly on the leading edge today, I would say, other than in video games, I guess, right? But, I mean,
you look at this and you think to yourself, why not? Right, because technically, all this is a motor, an electric motor with batteries and sensors.
That's all it is.
That's all it
is. I like how you've reduced the functionality and safety of an automobile
Where's the rack?
What is basically a tinker toy that anyone could construct?
Where's the power steering
just
pump on this?
Slap
thing?
The wheels on there and Raspberry Pi it off.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. Yeah, that's all it is. Just a Raspberry Pi with wheels. This thing looks interesting, but you know what's fascinating about this? We have kind of figured out what the style of electric cars are, and they're all Teslas.
I can't stand. That's the worst part of it to me. I will never understand the appeal of Tesla to anybody, and I don't get it. Like, they are ugly vehicles. I mean, obviously they have certain things about them, like the performance, the speed, and is incredible. It's ungodly, actually. But as far as people who are like car enthusiasts, like myself, who've been a car enthusiast their entire lives, like Tesla, electric cars, like really? Like, I think we all understand electric cars of the future. Like, we get it. But I don't understand the generic designs. I know it's all about aerodynamics or whatever, but.
But they're all very similar. But yeah, I'm looking at the Sony crazy. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you know what? There's a very good possibility this is going to become a real car.
That's wow!
Right, I'll tell you why.
You're pro Sony.
I don't accuse me of stuff this early.
I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but Apple did fail at this.
Apple did, but they didn't. But they failed at it at a time when it wasn't as accessible for them to do, and we didn't know the success. Like Porsche's having success. Lucid is in existence. BMW has an electric division. Audi is electric. Volkswagen. So they failed at this early in the game, but now the thing about Tesla is that their end goal is to be a components maker, not a car manufacturer. That's going to be their end goal. I'm willing to bet that these seats are from Tesla.
Interesting.
I'm willing to bet that Tesla manufactured, because I was talking to a friend of mine. He's very much into this, and it's part of what he does for a living. And he said, when you look at what Tesla's strategy is, they're looking to become the tire manufacturer for these cars. They're looking to become the battery. They're buying the battery factories. They're buying the tire factories. They are manufacturing seats, and there's only like four companies in the world that make seats. They're becoming a components manufacturer rather than an electric car manufacturer.
That's an interesting approach. I mean, if you think about it from the perspective of like another market, like PCs or something, like that's like saying like, you know, Microsoft built up a Surface PC business with the explicit goal of providing keyboards and touchpads and screens or whatever to other PC makers. You know, I mean, it's kind of an interesting, it sounds backwards. I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I really don't know, but it's interesting. Like, that's not usually the way you would think this would go. It'd be more likely that some maker of multiple components would one day wake up and say, hey, we have a car here. You know,
yeah.
Why don't we just sell it?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think that's eventually their end goal here, to kind of disrupt the market and then become a components manufacturer for all these companies, which is brilliant for them.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Okay. But Sony entering this game is fascinating because, you know, it's a 200 kilowatt, I guess, motor that produces 268 horsepower, top speed 148 miles per hour, 0 to 60 in 4.8 seconds or 4.7 seconds. This is an actual car that Sony is playing with the idea to become a manufacturer of. It is fascinating to me. It is really fascinating that this is the concept. But the bigger question here is, okay, so Sony enters the game. Let's say they make this into an actual car. People pre-order it, and now you're driving a Sony Vision S. Who's next? Which tech company's next to enter the game?
Well, I guess that the question for this kind of thing, when you think about big tech, is, for example, when we heard rumors that Apple was going to get into the car business, before that, remember the rumor was they were going to get into the TV business, and these don't necessarily sound like great businesses for Apple, right? For various reasons, different reasons actually. Like what company would it make sense for them to get into this market? You know, with all of the cost, the risk, you know, because God help you if a bunch of accidents occur because people weren't driving your vehicle, as is starting to happen at Tesla a little bit. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I don't really see a big future in passenger cars for tech companies, but a company like Amazon, I think there's some sense to them getting into the shipping end of it, like autonomous shipping vehicles of various kinds, right? Yeah. Whether they're trucks on the road or whatever. Like, that obviously makes tons of sense. But Amazon. I mean, they're obviously a very unique company because they have a big physical goods business. So, and food markets now as well. So, you know, but Google, Apple, any of those companies, like, Microsoft, I think, are where they need to be in this market. They're one of the suppliers of back-end technology and cloud services and that kind of stuff. I think that's where their strength is. You know, Apple, like, what is Apple's strength, really? I mean, other than phones. You maybe want their assistant in the entertainment system, or, you know, they have CarPlay or whatever. I mean, but the whole vehicle, like, I don't.
Well, here's the thing.
I don't know. And
the way that this kind of trickles down, in my opinion, is that, so Sony's looking at this, and maybe a car manufacturer is asking them to develop some of the software for the cars. Because everything is software-based. It's not mechanical anymore. Your ECU is running the entire car.
Yep.
So now your display is not mechanical. It's digital. It's not analog. Your entire control panel for your heat, for your radio, for your display is all a display that somebody's making the software. They become tech companies to some extent, the car manufacturers.
Yeah.
You know, Ford's been driving at this for 10 years to do this.
Yeah, but I have a fundamental problem with this whole scenario because you're right, first of all, but you got to remember that car manufacturers are coming at it from a completely different direction than big tech is. They're coming at it from a background where it was purely mechanical. It has been built up over many, many years. They understand all of the safety and reliability stuff very well, and that's their bar when they move to electronic-based whatever. The problem with Tesla, Sony, and then whatever big tech stuff getting into cars is you're going to see what happened with TVs happen there, which is now we have these devices that have to boot up, that have to download software updates, that have to install those software updates, we're going to have bugs because the software updates have bugs because we're introducing new issues every single time we install something. Like, I actually, I think that this is, it's in many ways, it's wrongheaded. Like, the worst thing about my TV is that it's smart. I just want a dumb display that turns on and turns off, and I can connect what I want to connect to it. You know, I think for a lot of Tesla owners or Tesla wannabe owners, like, one of the big advantages of that vehicle is that the software is continually updated. As a Windows 10 user, I can tell you that that is the number one reason not to buy that car. That's, I don't want it to be continually upgraded. Like, that's a really fundamental issue that I don't think enough people are paying attention to, you know, in their excitement over tech. Do you not understand what happens when you update things? How did iOS 13 go? And by the way, when iOS 13 doesn't work properly and, you know, the techie nerds complain on Twitter or whatever, nobody dies. You know, it's not really that big of a deal. But when you push a bad software update to a car, that's that could be serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I, you know, that's my, I don't know. I guess not that I don't mean it like I trust car makers. I mean, they're obviously terrible. Witness Volkswagen and Dieselgate or whatever. They can be just terrible as any other big company. But they do have this kind of long lasting understanding of how things work in this business. And we as consumers have maybe complained that they've moved slowly into certain areas, especially the in-car entertainment stuff or whatever. And that's fair. But I don't know. I know it's like old guy complaining about the clouds or whatever, but, you know, but as we move from mechanical engines to electronic systems, the reliability is, it's just going to go down.
Well, we're also getting technology for the sake of technology, right?
Yeah.
You have Android games in the Tesla now that you could play when you're parked.
Yeah. Great. You know? Yep.
It's that's having it just to have it.
Yeah. No, this is why, Andrew, my next car is going to be a 1978 Camaro Berlinetta. I want a car with no technology. It's going to have a carburetor. I think that car still had a carburetor, probably back then. I think it did. You know what I mean? I don't even want electronic fuel injection.
I just want something I
can rebuild on a weekend because I'm bored.
Yeah. If your car doesn't have a rack and pinion, Paul Theroux doesn't want it.
Yes. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Power steering, who needs that?
Power, exactly. I go to the gym. I don't need power
steering. I don't need power steering.
Yep.
You want vacuum hoses everywhere connecting in that engine.
Yeah. No, it's a tough thing because obviously a lot of the modern technology that's happening in cars, from anti-lock brakes to airbags and all that stuff, is all great. It's all important and whatever. But most of this stuff doesn't happen overnight. I think the problem with big tech is, especially the culture we have today, is it's a ship it first, test it later, full, you know, kind of worldview.
Well, that, and that's
everything
terrible,
has to happen immediately.
That's terrible.
I think it's happening more and more. Yeah, it's the wrong thing for that kind of market. It's just the wrong. Those are the wrong people. You just don't want them in charge of that. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, when I think we were doing a show when this happened, but when Apple put out their portrait mode on their phone.
Yeah.
And they released the phone, and during the entire event, they were talking about portrait mode. And they're like, oh, by the way, it's not coming out yet. You got to wait for it.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, you know what? This is interesting. Because now it's to get ahead of the next person.
Yep. So we're going to announce it and then release it in dribs and drabs later. And then next year, it's going to get even better.
Yeah.
By the way, what's the name of the Boeing plane that crashed multiple times they're not going to build anymore? And what was, I don't remember what the number of it is. The Boeing, whatever that thing is, completely grounded around the planet. What's wrong with that? Software problem, right? I mean, again, I'm not saying like, you know, we should still be trying, like, you know, flying a Wilbur and Orville Wright plane around, because those were completely mechanical. But I mean, you know, unfortunately, the reality is when you introduce more and more software into stuff, that's what happens. And that's a serious safety issue. I mean, there are literal examples of that thing crashing. All for the same reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's scary.
Yeah, very. To kind of go to a different side of this.
slightly less disturbing side.
Yeah, less disturbing side. So I, you know, I'm looking at the trends this year, and it's a lot of these foldable displays. That's the big story this year.
I would
say
folding and dual screen displays.
Dual screen displays where it's not necessarily dual screen in the sense of two screens. It's dual screen in the sense of, you know, you got your laptop, and then the bottom piece is another display.
Yep.
That seems to be the trend for CES 2020. Is this going to be, you know, this year's thing where every manufacturer now has a some sort of dual screen device, and next year we go into the foldables?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or bendables?
You know what? I feel like the dual screen folding screen thing. Well, first of all, folding screens are inevitable. I mean, eventually this will just be common technology. It will be in a bunch of different device types. Does it make sense for PCs? I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't remember the exact year, but when Longhorn was still a thing, Microsoft had a WinHack event in Seattle. So it would have been like 2004, maybe 2005, somewhere in that time frame. And Asus at the time, I don't think made their own PCs, but they were an ODM, and they showed off this laptop that had a little external display in the little lid of the laptop. And it had a kind of a bump with it because, you know, was the reality of the situation at the time. It was a small display. It was not very big. Yeah. And there was a name for this technology. It came and went. It doesn't matter. It never occurred. Windows Vista, which came out of Longhorn, never included this technology. The idea was you were carrying around your laptop. And remember, this is like pre-smartphones, right? So not many people had like PDAs or anything where we could get instant access to our schedule, the latest email, whatever it was. So this is pre-smartphone, obviously, by several years. And the idea was that this thing would have notifications on the outside of it, right? So you would see that you got a new email, and you could see that you had a, you know, whatever the other, you know, calendar event or whatever schedule, some schedule thing was coming up. And, you know, it was like an idea of the day. When you look back on it, because of the way the world changed, especially with smartphones, you can see now why that thing never would have continued. It didn't really make any sense in the long term. Whatever. And I feel like the stuff we're looking at today in the PC space, the e-ink screen on the back of a laptop lid that Lenovo has in a particular ThinkPad, or the multiple examples of folding displays or two displays in a clamshell kind of a thing, or this actually it might be Asus, by the way, I don't remember, but I think it's Asus who has on the keyboard deck above the keyboard, there's a screen, like a big screen, kind of like the MacBook touch bar, but much bigger. I don't know. You know, these things seem kind of hokey, temporary, you know?
I don't know.
I'm
trying to figure out
where it all went wrong.
Where it goes. Like, I understand, like, now it's hokey, right? But, like, sometimes you got to think two steps ahead and say, okay, well, this is where it's going to really shine.
I think that one we can answer, because I think the ultimate end game here is pervasive folding screen technology, right? I was talking to Brad earlier today, so I forgive anyone who's listened to two shows today and heard me say this twice, but there's a big science fiction meme there was a long time ago in movies, you know, promo videos, whatever, where it was like a guy on a train reading what looked like a newspaper, but it was really an electronic folding kind of paper thing. And so he would scrape across. It'd be like it looked like a newspaper, because in the world of the time when this invented, it was inconceivable that a newspaper would look anything like a newspaper did at the time, right? So it's this giant thing, but he would fold it up and kind of put it in his pocket when he got off the train. And the idea was you could unfold it and fold it, and you could fold it into different scenarios, and it would never crease or bend or, you know, or ruin itself or whatever, or scratch. And that will absolutely happen someday. Of course it will. And those displays will be so cool, because you'll be able to put one up on a wall, and you can bring it on a plane, and it will be, you know, won't take up a lot of space or whatever. But when we look at the stuff today, of course, they're jamming these displays into the devices that we kind of already know and use. And so, it may or may not make sense over time for a phone type device, a tablet type device, a PC type of device, probably not, but we're going to experiment with all of these things short term and see what sticks. And I don't think any of this stuff sticks. You know, I think about like multi-touch on PCs or pens on PCs, right? These are technologies that debuted in the very early 2000s on tablet PC, basically. They became multi-touch over time. Phones came out, made this stuff even bigger. Do most people use multi-touch or a pen regularly on a PC today? No. But they're readily available if you want them, right? For the people who do want them. And so, like, this folding screen stuff, like, I mean, is there some folding screen device that makes more sense, as much sense to me for as a productivity user, someone who wants to write, use a spreadsheet, browse the web, or whatever it is, as a normal laptop form factor? I don't think so. You know, so, you know, we'll see.
I think, like, I'll give an example. The touch bar, right, on the Mac. There are moments that it's really useful. Those moments are maybe 1% of my weekly computer usage.
Yeah.
In theory, is it a cool idea? Sure, but why? What did this add? What did this remove? What's the point of it? They just did it because they saw a render of it from 2 years ago that somebody made.
Yeah. Well,
that's
right.
Literally
the,
why they
the
made
Microsoft
it.
The rationale for a two-screen device is non-existent. There's no rationale for it. And again, I brought this up earlier today. I didn't mean to just repeat myself continuously, but just for your edification, remember when Steve Jobs introduced the iPad? He said, for this thing to make sense, it has to do key things better than the other devices that already exist. And he went through some lists, and we can argue about them, whether email is better or worse or indifferent compared to how it works elsewhere. It doesn't matter, or web browsing or whatever the things he said were, but he justified the existence of this thing, not with a single sentence, but with a list of items that made it make sense. And it does or it doesn't. You know, again, like I said, we can debate it. It doesn't really matter. But I think we need to hold these new device types to that same level of, you know, qualification. Is this better? Like, is there some advantage, a meaningful advantage, over the current devices we already have? Because we have tons of devices. You know, we have obviously phones and tablets and PCs of various kinds, many, many kinds of PCs, but there's all kinds of other digital devices still, like ebook readers and so forth. And we have screens of all kinds everywhere. Screens are everywhere. I mean, what does this do that's better today? I don't think that much. You know?
I don't know. You know, I understand. Like, the iPad, when it first came out, I think the joke was, oh, it's just an iPhone. But I don't think that people understood, functionality-wise, how it's a companion device. You know, it's an in-between. For those moments that you really don't need a laptop, but you don't need your phone isn't going to do it. That's what it was for. Now it's taking a whole different tone. You know, now it's a laptop replacement with a keyboard, and you could have a mouse attached, and you could do all this stuff.
Well, just the bigger screen itself. It sounds like such a basic thing, and it is, but that's what's transformational, right?
I mean, I got to tell you something. I had my daughter's fourth birthday at the house, and all of her friends and, like, family friends, like, there were a bunch of kids anywhere from, like, 2 years old to, like, 9, 10. So I lost my phone. I couldn't find it. It was somewhere in the house. So I took out my iPad Pro, the giant one, like the gigantic, colossus-sized iPad. When I took this thing out to find my iPhone, these kids looked at me. They're like, what is that? Like, is that an iPad? I'm like, it is. She goes, why is it so big? To them, it was so foreign, this thing. Yeah. And it's only a couple years old. You know, you're talking 2017, I got this thing.
Yeah, but iPad Pros are very unusual. I think most kids have seen, like, the traditional iPad.
Or an iPad Mini,
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's, and obviously phones and all that, but
they couldn't believe that that's an iPad. And they're like, why is that thing so big? They were shocked. And I was like, you know what? That's such an interesting reaction. I've never thought of it in terms of a kid that grew up with an iPad. That's all they know. Right. They don't know laptops. None of these kids use laptops, have never gotten near a laptop.
Did any of them ask you what a computer was?
You know what's so funny? So my wife's best friend's daughter, she's like 8 years old.
Yeah.
She comes into my office all the time. She finds it to be the coolest room ever because I got the blue lights, I got the mics, I got the camera. So she always sits here. So she was looking at this display that's here. And I look at her, and she's doing this. And she looks at me. She goes, I think your screen is broken.
Right.
She was, for people who were listening, she went to touch the screen. Like, she was using it as a touch screen on this display. Yep. To her, and my daughter, too. She doesn't go anywhere near my MacBook. She only uses My daughter loves the HP. Of course. Like, I kind of have put in my own agenda here where I don't want her using an iPad. I want her using a laptop.
Yeah. Okay.
And the HPs that I have, they're all touchscreen. When she goes to my Mac, she's like, Daddy, why isn't this working?
Right.
And then she looked at me. She's like, listen, you got to get rid of this shit. Just like that.
The only story, I mean, my kids are older.
And then she told me called her and told her that, you know, Dad is a Mac guy and, you know, I'm so sorry.
Right.
Yeah, that was a conversation we had.
My, I probably told this story before, but my daughter was visiting across the street when we still lived in Dedham. So this, my daughter is like 17 years old now, right? So, but at the time, you know, she's probably 10 years ago or something. They had some extra room that had a bunch of garbage in it, you know, just stuff that, you know, like they were storing in there or whatever. And this is giant box. And my daughter says to the mother across the street, she says, what is this thing? And Valerie, the mother, said, oh, that's a TV set. But it was a rear projection TV set. So, it, you know, it had that huge back. And she said, well, what's all this stuff behind it? Like, to her, a TV set was this thin thing you put up on the wall, you know? And that's that I think that's her version of why can't you touch the, you know, the screen? It's just, she was just of a certain era and this stuff just seems old fashioned now. Yeah. Probably had a carburetor in it for all I know.
It probably had a carburetor. There you go. Listen, I grew up working on a 79 Camaro. So yeah. I'm all
carburetor. Did it have a carburetor?
It was dual carburetor. My father had a dual carburetor.
Nice.
Yeah, that thing had a Corvette engine in there.
Sure.
It was a 350. Thing would start up, and all the fumes would come right into the house.
They had to go somewhere, Andrew.
It would take them four turns. It would take them four turns to get that thing going. My whole house was shaking. That explains why I'm the way that I am.
Right.
So, I don't know. Dual screen displays, they seem to be the thing. Foldable displays are what's next, I guess, in the line of things. You know, I love going back, and I'm kind of going back like years past. I'm looking at the notes while we were talking. Drones were a big thing 2 years ago. They are gone from this year. They're not a prime focus.
I feel like drones hit the audience, right? Like, in other words, drones are fascinating. I'm really interested in drones.
So am I.
But I think the people that want them have them. You know, I mean, I think it might have plateaued. I mean, what's the market for this stuff? Are we going to zip around the neighborhood and take video of the people in the backyard?
Here we go. Here's the state of CES. Okay. If you guys just want to know, and by the way, I'm not modifying this list.
Okay.
I'm on The Verge right now, and I'm so looking at their front page.
Yeah.
Inside the Intel Ghost Canyon Nook, which I'm actually interested in this, it's a modular.
Yeah, that's the gaming one.
Which I want to talk about that. Sonos is suing Google. Fine, that's news.
Right.
Best part of OnePlus Concept One isn't the disappearing camera. Fine, that's news. I tasted the impossible pork at CES 2020.
Oh, stop it.
Okay. Sony's just car, stop. Fine. Atmos Facewear makes clean air an expensive accessory.
Okay.
Okay, so it's like a mask that gives you clean air. I'm skipping down. That's not CES. And here we go. The first one is the sex toy ban from CES last year is unlike anything we've ever seen.
The what, huh?
The sex toy ban. And then you got a bunch of
ban?
Yeah, ban.
What do you
remember last year? There was like this whole thing where like the sex toy won best of CES. And then they took it away. CES like, no. And it was a whole thing. People were in outrage. I mean, I'm looking at this. There's nothing. It's just a scooter. A $900 scooter makes its way. Razer's concept for the 5G router. Okay, fine. That's pretty cool. It's like hit or miss. It's everywhere. It's all over the place.
What's the stuff that's realistically going to impact the most people? Seriously. Like,
I don't know.
I think the 5G thing is kind of interesting.
I'm just going based on what I see. What stood out to me, right? I'm looking at this. The Impossible Burger. They've made it.
That's not a CES story. I don't know what the hell that has to do with it.
It's debuting at CES though.
Okay, who cares?
You know,
seriously. By the way, I have a Dunkin' Donuts sells an impossible sausage thing right now. What I mean,
I spoke to Ayaz about this one time, and it wasn't like
about
a
the
debate.
Futility of his life. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like, it wasn't like a aggressive conversation, but we were having like a drink. We were talking about this. And by the way, he works for CNET and he does unbelievable stuff over there. He's like the face of CNET now. And CNET's one of the better ones, obviously, when you talk about tech coverage. So this is not a knock at him or his company. But we were talking about the state of tech journalism, right? Like, I don't consider myself a journalist. The show that I do, I'm doing a somewhat entertaining, that's my attempt to entertain you with technology. It's a conversation that we have. So I'm not delivering dry news. So I was talking to him about, I'm like, listen, if I go to a tech website, I want technology. I don't want politics. I don't want sex toys. I don't want food. And he turned around and he goes, but Andrew, he goes, everything is tech now. Technology is no longer a pocket of interest for certain people. It's everything.
I disagree.
Everything is tech.
I'm sorry. I disagree. What?
But you know what, though? He does have a point. When you are a tech company, but these are all businesses now. If you are covering technology, how many people are going to CNET right now?
All he's doing is justifying the fact that CNET cannot, by his definition, cover anything they want.
Yeah, of course. And you know what? That's everybody now. Everybody's covering everything because you have to survive.
I don't know.
It's all about ad clicks.
All right.
At the end of the day,
Let's not get too meta about the industry. Let's not worry about that.
By the way, Ars Technica sticks to technology.
Yeah, sure. Because that's what they are. They're a tech site.
They stick to tech. But I'll tell you, they're landing. Their hits are not as much as anybody else, which is fascinating. You know, and I go to them if I want to read something. Anyway, I just find the coverage fascinating this year. I find the interest fascinating. The press releases that I'm getting about products, I've never even imagined they would be there.
I still get emails as if I was at the show. So there's all these invitations to go to events and blah, 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 whatever. And I find it very interesting because it's a gamut. You can tell, first of all, you can tell most of these things are mass mail. So they just go to anyone who's ever been to CES. So it could be anything from, you know, feminine products to athletic something or a Peloton competitor and a vehicle stuff and, you know, and then actual, you know, computer industry, personal tech stuff. I mean, it's all over the gamut, but I don't know. I think the biggest, if you want to break it down, like the biggest thing about CES is like, I think I said this earlier, it's just like trying to figure out what the important stuff is. And most of the stuff is just noise, you know, or like this screen stuff we've been talking about. Cause to me, from my perspective, the dual screen folding screen stuff sort of is the big story that came out of CES this year. I also think it's going to be the thing that has the smallest impact.
Yeah.
Based on compared to the hype or the amount of attention it gets. You know, you've mentioned in passing some kind of a 5G thing that was a headline on The Verge's website. I think 5G is going to have a much bigger impact this year to more people, more meaningful, more long term than any of this screen baloney, personally, you know?
Philips Hue. By the way, you know what I got for Christmas? The Hue Play?
What is that?
Okay. The Hue Play, they're lights that go by your TV.
Okay. And you are they the like, play they're box. Big, like, rectangle? Like, you put two of them behind your TV and it kind of... syncs up with the content you're watching or whatever.
Yes. So, but in order for it to sync up with the content you're watching, you got to get the Play box, which is about $250.
Of course.
I'm getting this thing. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to get it because I've been attempting to do this without a computer for years. You could do this currently, and there are tons of other cheaper solutions that do this, and they're computer driven. This Hue Sync, $230. It went on sale. They just added a whole bunch of stuff to it. But it's interesting that this is one of the top things. Like, Philips announcing their light bulbs are a big story at CES this year. And rightfully so, because it's mainstream. There's a mainstream cause over there. People really like this stuff.
Yep.
The other thing, obviously, live mesh networks, big part of CES this year. Everybody has a really advanced mesh network. But something that you're not hearing too much about is the TV situation. Normally, it's tons of TVs.
Yeah.
I have not seen too much come out the first day or two.
Right, because what's you know, there's nothing truly exciting in TVs. You'll have the 8K stuff. You'll have the zero bezel kind of stuff, which whatever.
It is, zero bezel and 8K. That's what the big story is here.
Yeah, and those aren't big stories.
Yeah. You know? I'm just looking at the TV. Sony has a bezel-less 8K. Panasonic has a brighter OLED. LG has a rollable OLED.
You mentioned Philips Hue, and they're an interesting thing because I really like the functionality there. Their app is one of the biggest pieces of crap that has ever existed. Like, it's terrible.
The Hue app?
Yeah, it's terrible. And it very much reminds me of like the Sonos app. The Sonos app is another horrible piece of crap that should never exist. And these are really good examples of why we need what I think that big agreement we saw at the end of last year between all of the big smart home players to agree on a communication standard, so that you can do something from any system and say, I want this to happen in my living room, and it impacts a bunch of different things, lights and shades and security and blah, 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 whatever. That stuff is so important and is going to be a big deal moving forward. These individual companies, like those are two I just have a lot of experience with because I use them a lot and they're just awful and I hate them. I wish there was some kind of a Wink or Home, whatever the Apple thing is called, I can't remember anymore. Or, you know, Google Home or whatever, like that actually worked and did all of the stuff that those systems were supposed to do and let me never use those individual apps. Like I there's some interesting technology that Philips Hue or whatever they're called now have come out with. And the weak link in that chain is the app, you know, like it's their app is terrible.
And can I tell you something? Out of all the smart, the smart bulb apps, it's the best one.
But it's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrible. And I could spend an hour talking about why it's terrible. It's easy. Like, it's terrible. And it's the type of thing where, like, I have, let's see, 7 lights on the front of the house. And I would say 75% of the time, one of them will be wrong. Like, they can't remember settings. That's the most basic computer software problem in the world. This is what it's supposed to be. When it turns on, make sure it's this thing. Like, easy.
You know what?
I can't do it. It's terrible.
Something that stands out to me. By the way, I was very much the guy that said, you know what? You really don't need Philips Hue's. There are just tons of other options. There's this, you know, the one that I have right now in my office. It's a $18 bulb that's as good, if not brighter, than the Hues.
Sure.
I have the LifeX lights that are as good, if not as better, than the Hues. In my bedroom, though, I did all Hues. And even though the app is not great, the app's functionality compared to the other ones, the other ones are so abysmal.
Yeah, I mean, so
this is the one that I like to use.
Yeah. I wish, like I said, I wish there was a central control thing that actually worked that just kind of did it all. Music is an issue, same problem with music, but... I obviously Philips Hue is one of the big kind of innovators in the space. They're going to be more expensive, you know, the kind of the Sonos of that world. I mean, those companies probably have a lot in common actually, but, I understand why people will say like, look, here's a light bulb. It's only $15. It does everything the Philips Hue thing does. You know, there is some value in going with like a single solution that, you know, where it does everything and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. And for whatever it's worth, by the way, as much as I'm complaining about, Philips Hue, but I also am using Philips Hue, right? So, I'm still using it, right? So my hope is that like the quality of the stuff they make is so good. I feel like the software has to catch up. Like it will eventually catch up, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of making that bet.
And
but I like
ones.
Their functionality a lot. I like the lights. We have some of those things in the corners. The thing you're describing is in many ways, not exactly, but for the TV set, it's like a replacement for the light strip type thing.
Yeah.
Which is what I have. And I am intrigued by their stuff. And they always come out with every, 6 months or so, they have new stuff and new types of lights. And it's always, you know, it's pretty great. So...
It's improved.
I understand going with Philips Hue. Philips Hue. What did I say? Philips Hue. That's right. Yeah. I don't know why that sounds weird when they said it.
They got a whole bunch of stuff. They got 3 new outdoor lights this year.
Yep.
So great. Anything stood out to you, Paul, that was announced?
No, not yet. I mean,
it's only day one. I know.
The biggest news that you just kind of referenced is Sonos suing Google. I don't know if you saw this story. It actually broke in the New York Times, but Sonos many years ago wanted to open up their terrible app to other services. And so they talk to the Pandoras of the world and everyone else. And one of the companies they talked to was Google. And in order for you to understand how the app needed to, you know, how your service had to work within their app, Sonos had to basically reveal how their system worked. And then Google just stole it and they turned it into Chromecast. So that's fascinating to me. And then Amazon also stole it and they are using it with their smart speakers. And so what they're basically alleging is not just that they have stolen multiple patented technologies from Sonos, but that they're now, because of the nature of their businesses, where they can sell really cheap speakers because A, they didn't do any of the R&D, and B, it's part of a bigger ecosystem that generates tons and tons of money related to advertising, especially. They can sell these things for much cheaper prices than Sonos can. So they're also undercutting the market that Sonos created. And it's this is up there with Samsung versus Apple, the Microsoft antitrust stuff, potentially. Like, this could be an astonishing legal case, depending on how it develops. Like, this is something to follow. Like, that's to me, that's the biggest thing that happened this week. It just happened.
It's not a CES story, but it
no. Well, no, other than the fact that it is coincidental to CES where this type of technology is being shown off all over the place.
Yeah.
You know?
HP released a bunch of laptops, a bunch of hardware in general. Mm-hmm. The new Spectre X360 is stunning.
Yeah, and they fixed the problem with last year's version, which was that it had a Synaptics touchpad that was really bad. And they've finally gone with the Microsoft Precision touchpad. And
oh, very nice.
That was pretty much the only issue. And it's a beautiful machine. And they've done a great job, again, with the, you know, the bezels are smaller still. It's, and the thing is, it's amazing. Like, HP has always had like a big top bezel and a very big bottom bezel in the display. They've really reduced those dramatically. So when you put this thing on top of last year's version, it's like it's not quite an inch, but it's almost an inch less deep because it's and thus an inch less tall. So they've done an awesome job with that thing.
Hmm.
And then there's a 15-inch version.
I got to contact them. I got to get my hands on it. Are you getting yours beautiful. Yet or no?
I got the 13. I don't have.
Oh, you
the
got
15
the 13. Yet. Yeah. Nice. When did you get yours? Recently?
Like 2 months ago, Andrew. I'm.
Oh, and you haven't
no,
about
it was
it.
No, it was in December, I think.
Okay, I gotta contact them to get it. Also, we didn't speak about the Series X.
Yeah,
not spoken about.
Actually, before we move on to from HP, the one you might want to ask them about actually is you're familiar with their Elite Book line, which is the line kind of the Spectre for business, if you will.
Yeah.
The very best laptop I used last year was the Elite Book 1040. That's the 14-inch version of the Elite Book, right? So
yeah, the G6, what is it? Elite Book
G5, I think. Okay. It came out in, I want to say, February ish timeframe, something like that.
Okay.
It was early last year. So this past fall, they announced and then very recently released something called the Elite Dragonfly, which is actually an Elite Book, right? So it doesn't replace, but it's a 13-inch Elite Book. So it's sort of like the Elite Book 1030.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a 12-inch body. It's magnesium, not aluminum, so it's light. And there's something about magnesium that I just love. This is something that was true, like with the Google Pixel 3a, which was not magnesium. I'm sorry, that's not magnesium. That's polycarbonate. But there's something to these other like non-aluminum materials where it's not metal. Like I just prefer it. And this thing has that same feel to it. So calling it plastic makes it sound cheap. Yeah. It's not what I mean. But the magnesium, it has like a polycarbonate style feel to it. It's perfect. Like it is a beautiful.
Have you gotten your hands on this one or no?
Yeah. That would be the more interesting one for you, I think. It's the one that's kind of a blue color.
Yeah. I'm looking at this.
It's really, really neat.
And it's gorgeous. Super wide, the display.
Yeah, it's a wide display, but it's small, it's light, it's great. You can get a version of they actually offer it with two different batteries. So there's actually a version of this thing that's I'm just off the top of my head, but it's something like 2.2 pounds, which is crazy light. And then the version I have is probably closer to 2.5 pounds because I have the bigger battery. But
I'm looking at this thing; it's actually really nice.
It's a beautiful, beautiful machine.
You know, it's interesting because I've become
very, very close to the Spectre.
I have become a real big fan of HP. Big fan of their product line. It's a totally different company from the time that we, you know, from even 5 years ago. They put out such an amazing line. And I'm really honest about what I like and don't like about it. I have the Spectre from a year ago in front of me. And I have the Elite Book, this one.
Yep.
I think this is the, what is it, the 1030?
It's probably the 1030, yeah.
Yeah, I have the 1030 here. This is my favorite computer.
Yeah. Yeah, so my favorite computer is the 14-inch version of that.
Yeah.
The Dragonfly is basically the next version of the thing you're holding, although they are actually going to make a normal aluminum 1030 this coming year, of course. But
and this,
it's beautiful.
This monstrosity.
Right.
At least it has
a keyboard that works.
At least it. No. This one doesn't work. The one in my office does.
That's the other one.
This is the 15. Yeah, this is the 2018. The 2019 works. The keyboard is way better. Way. I mean, it's night and day. Let me see. Anything else that we missed? We have the HP stuff, obviously. Bendable displays.
Yeah, you were going to move on.
Yes.
You were going to ask about something else.
Yeah.
Xbox.
Series X. We have not discussed this.
Right.
We have not spoken about the Series X. This was announced a while ago. We haven't really done a show, but there's controversy, obviously, because AMD showed off a rendered image.
A non-existent
version of this, and people are freaking out. And apparently in this rendered image, that's two HDMI ports.
Yeah, so it's not going to have two HDMI ports.
It's not.
That's not true.
Okay.
Yeah.
What can we talk about? You know, when it comes to the device. I don't know where to begin because we haven't done it for a while.
Yeah, just a couple of things real quick. I mean, so obviously this is the part of a family of consoles that will come out next fall. I don't know if two are going to debut at once, but I believe there will be a second one that I think they're going to call Xbox Series S, right? So you can see the naming kind of carrying forward from the previous gen devices. The X is the high-end one. The stated goal here is, frankly, what the Xbox One X should have been, which is 4K all the time, 60 frames per second all the time or better, right? And that's the thing they're trying to achieve with this. It's basically a PC. It's coming in a mini tower enclosure, a very high-end PC, I should say. It's backwards compatible. It will be back. It's an Xbox One kind of family of devices. They're not really marketing it that way, but it's going to be backwards compatible. Backward compatible, I guess is the right way to say that. And there'll be two versions of it. So they've been talking about the high-end version, of course, and then there'll be a PlayStation 5 that will compete against it. And there's been there will always be debate about these things. I would guess that they'll be roughly comparable, just as they kind of are roughly comparable today with the current generation. But the Xbox technically today comes out ahead in some important ways, and what we've heard so far is that will be the case for the next one. But I think they're going to be.
It also is going to support 8K, correct?
That I'm not sure about. But if it does, you got to remember, 8K at what, like 15 frames?
At a variable refresh rate.
They were kind of, when the Xbox One X came out a couple of years ago, they were not very clear about this, but they talked 4K, they talked 60 frames a second. The truth is almost no games do both of those things.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like a sports game or a shooter or something like that, you have to make a trade-off somewhere. And so they leave that up to the game maker. If you want to, have better frame rates and you can lower the resolution, you can do that. If you want to have the resolution all the time and have lower frame rates, you can choose that. It's up, and you never really have to advertise it. It's up to the game maker. So I think the point of this next gen is going to be no compromises on those things. And that makes tons of sense.
Yeah. Let me just follow up here. I'm just looking at some of the specs. So is there any pricing that this is obviously coming out in this is going to come out for the Christmas season, correct?
Yeah. I would assume like a October, November launch, something like that.
It's big. It's a big tower.
Yep. If you stand an Xbox One X up, it's not quite as tall as that. It is thicker. It's, cause it's more of like a slab. Well, it's not really, it's not a flat slab. It's a, what do you call that? When it's like a, what does it resemble? I don't know. What does it resemble? I don't know. A loaf of bread stacked on its side, that kind of shape. What do you call that?
A loaf of bread stacked on its side.
That kind of thing.
That's what I would call it.
I don't know what to call it. Like, it's not a cylinder. Obviously, it's, you know,
it's
squared
size,
out, rectangular.
If we were to, based on the rendered image, obviously, if you were to take an Xbox controller and stack 3.5 of them on top of each other, that's the size of it.
All right.
Okay. So no pricing yet.
No, it's going to be expensive.
And Microsoft has not said anything about VR on this box, correct?
They have explicitly said there will not be VR. Yeah, that the customers have not asked for that.
Interesting. But Sony's going to have it.
I'm not 100% sure, but based on the fact that they did have it, they did sell millions of units, there is a whole ecosystem there, I'd be surprised if they didn't continue that, you know.
Ooh, new iPhone SE 2 leaks.
Yo. What does it look like?
It looks basically an iPhone 8.
Oh, really? That's too bad.
Yeah.
Like with bezels and stuff?
I'm looking at the back of it. I'm not looking at the front. Let me see the front.
Where did you see this?
Tech Radar.
I have such high hopes for this SE 2 thing. Just like I sort of have high hopes
from one leaker.
Pixel 4a Tech Radar.
Oh yeah. It looks like it's wow. This is weird. And finally, here comes your first look at Apple's highly anticipated iPhone SE 2, aka the iPhone 9. He calls it.
Yeah.
360 video and stunning virtual rendered in 5K over for my friends. It looks, I mean, there's a bezel. It's round.
Yeah, it looks exactly like an iPhone 8. No. It's what it looks like. That's too bad. Except, with the bezel. Ah, oh, jeez. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
What's old is new. What's old new is old.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So, here's the thing. Anything that you're looking forward to this year? We didn't do... You know what? Why don't we do it on What the Talk? We'll talk about that. I want to do some of my tech stuff on What the Talk. We got to do What the Talk. Okay. Guys, if you are watching this live, you can stay tuned and watch. If not, do us a favor. Go and check us out. We do What the Talk each and every week on patreon.com/whatthetalk. You can fund us as little as $1 per episode, and you get access to an archive of just ramblings of Paul and I talking sometimes about tech, sometimes not about tech. We kind of cover a lot on the show. Sometimes it's just our lives, and I think that's the cool thing about What the Talk. We don't necessarily stick to tech. Today, I kind of want to stick to tech because there's so much that we didn't talk about over the last couple of weeks when we were on break. Anything coming up for you, Paul?
No, nothing major in the short term. I'm kind of a little focused, a little maybe overly focused on the Windows 7 stuff because Windows 7, of course, is hitting its end of support date next week. 10 years. Speaking of 10 years, right? Windows 7 is going away.
Yeah.
Actually, if you look at Brad's... you might have it on throughout.com. Yeah, Brad has an image of the back of the new Xbox if you were curious about the ports.
All right. Sounds good. For all things Paul, go to throughout.com. For all things me, go to gfknetwork.com. I forgot where I'm at for a second. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarin. Again, patreon.com/whatthetech. Go there to get access to What the Talk, and we'll see you next time. Take care.